Welcome to What's Killing My Kale. This is a podcast from University of Minnesota Extension all about integrated pest management tactics for vegetable and fruit producers. I'm Annie Claude, and I'm an Extension Educator here for fruit and vegetable production.
And I'm Natalie Hoidel, an Extension Educator with the Pesticide Safety and Environmental Education team. Each week, we'll talk with a different farmer or researcher about the specific pest issues they're dealing with and the techniques that they're using to manage those pests.
In this week's series of podcasts, we'll be talking about spotted-winged Drosophila. Spotted-winged Drosophila is a pest of Asian origin. It was first confirmed in Minnesota on August 10, 2012, in several counties throughout the state. The reason why this is such a significant pest for fruit producers is that it has many generations per year, and the females lay eggs directly into the fruit of raspberry, blackberry, blueberry, grapes, cherries, several other fruit crops. According to Bill Hutchison, extension entomologist with University of Minnesota Extension, the first spotted-winged Drosophila fly was caught June 7th this year at his raspberry research site in Rosemount, Minnesota. This is very close to the average date of first catch for southern Minnesota of approximately June 15th. Additional traps will be checked for SWD the week of June 11th, this week. So the SWD season is underway. It usually takes about 4 to 5 weeks for populations to start building, so that much of the June-bearing strawberry harvest is complete before the heaviest SWD occurs. To continue monitoring SWD populations throughout the summer, growers can check the Fruit Edge website, www.fruitedge.umn.edu. Even better, growers should have at least one SWD trap on their farm to know what the potential infestation pressure will be for their crops and their individual property. Information on how to order SWD traps or make your own using apple cider vinegar is also available on the Fruit Edge website. And in this series of episodes, I chatted with Mary Rogers, who's a faculty member with organic fruit and vegetable production, and she's been doing a lot of research on SWD. And then I went down to Blue Fruit Farm and talked to Jim Riddle, who is an organic grower who's been growing organically for a long time and has some very interesting tactics for managing SWD on his farm. And then I also talked to Bill Hutchinson, who is a faculty entomologist at the university who has also been studying SWD. So we were able to get their input on this issue from a number of different perspectives. In this first section of the episode, you'll hear an interview that I did with Mary Rogers. Let's go there now.
All right, so we're here with Mary Rogers today. And what is your role at the university?
I'm assistant professor in the Department of Horticultural Science, and I work with local and organic horticultural crop production. So we do a lot of work with growers, research on farm. It's real stakeholder-driven kind of research. Lately, focusing a lot on strawberry and raspberry, blueberry, so the fruit, small fruit that's affected by spotted-winged Drosophila.
So speaking of spotted-winged Drosophila, it's a major pest that a lot of folks are worried about within the state. What is spotted-winged Drosophila, and who in the state needs to care about it?
Spotted-winged Drosophila is an invasive vinegar fly. It's from Southeast Asia. It has been in the U.S. since 2008, and we found it in Minnesota, I think, in 2012. It lays its eggs in soft-skinned small fruit. So it's real concerning for fruit growers. Its host range really spans from strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, cherries are also affected. In Minnesota particularly, we're looking at strawberries, raspberries, and blueberries. So it's an economically damaging pest. It's really a significant one. We never really used to have to spray arcane fruit for pests, and now this is kind of what we're calling a game changer in this area. So one of our biggest questions, I would say, is we're trying to figure out whether or not it can overwinter in our state,
right?
Right now we're thinking it doesn't, but just because we end up seeing it at the same time every year, and that's, I would say, late June, early July. We're not finding it all spring when there are host resources available. So for that reason, we speculate that it's coming, it's flying up every year. We tend to see it in certain areas, and then by the end of the summer, we're really finding it everywhere where fruit is grown. But But the problem is the populations can build up so high and that the tolerance is so low. So even one egg or one larvae per berry is enough to render that fruit completely unmarketable. And it really, it can rapidly decrease the shelf life of fruit like raspberries and blueberries. They start to turn to mush pretty quickly.
Okay. Speaking of fruit and berries, are they safe to eat if they have larvae in them?
Yes, it's more, the larvae's not gonna hurt you. We joke that it's a little extra protein
in your
fruit. I think it's just the ick factor and the quality of the berry. So the berry kind of, the wound that the larvae is creating in the fruit as a result of the feeding damage can also introduce other pathogens. So you might have the fruit, rotting faster due to fungi and bacteria that are, taking advantage of the resource. What we're recommending is trapping for early monitoring. Basically, early monitoring allows you to know when the pest is out. And then at that point, really you want to start looking for it in your fruit and start your control. And there's a number of different trap designs. Folks can go online. There's a lot of different resources online. eOrganic is a really great resource right now that has information on traps that growers can make easily. So using apple cider vinegar and bread yeast in a water and with a little bit of unscented soap.
So is there a tolerance threshold established for spotted wing? So if somebody, let's say they scouted it in their farm and they find it in their traps, it is there. At that point, should they start doing something about it?
The frustrating thing with the traps is that the numbers of adults captured in traps don't correlate nicely to the numbers of infested fruit. And so that's why we're really using the traps as more of an early monitoring indicator. So knowing when the adults are out there flying around, then it's time to start protecting your fruit. And in the fruit, it has its tolerance of zero. So that makes it really tough to manage.
Right, because it's not like an insect that's just feeding on leaves where you can tolerate, 25%.
It's feeding on the fruit that we eat.
So if there's one there, that's it, zero tolerance threshold.
Yeah, and so as a result, the fruit industry as a whole has been diverting some of their fruit to processing versus the fresh market. So in processing, you really can't tell. It doesn't affect the quality of the product, the end product, as it would, if you're eating fresh berries. But the concern then with that is there's only so much supply that processing, the processors can accommodate. And also it's a lower value kind of product. So we really want fruit, consumers demand high quality fresh fruit for the fresh market. So it's concerning for us from that standpoint.
And are there growers who are fishing through the berries to find the damaged ones versus?
Yeah, and it can be hard to tell sometimes just by looking at the fruit.
Right.
An advanced infestation, you'll see a lot of mushy fruit where it's really obvious. With raspberries, one of the indicators or tells is when you harvest the fruit, you can see the white receptacle will be often stained pink or red from the juice, from the leaky fruit, as a result of the larvae feeding inside. But early on, at the egg stage, you really can't tell, right? So we're recommending that growers pick fruit that looks good. and then cold storage can help slow the development of the egg into larvae. As well as just frequent sanitation. So removing fruit that's obviously infested, removing that fruit that's unmarketable, the cull fruit, making sure that it's that berries are picked thoroughly and frequently. And sanitation is actually one of our best tools at the moment for this pest.
Has anyone done any work looking at how much extra labor or time is involved with those sanitation techniques?
I mean, we're trying to figure that out because with this pest, it's going to increase production costs no matter what, whether or not it's increasing your chemical spray because there's the increased cost in the product and also the time of spraying. But there's sanitation is obviously adding to labor costs. And so these things all need to be, tallied up and accounted for sure.
Sure. Do you know of growers who have completely had to drop out of their operations because of
this? Unfortunately, I do. Yeah, there are growers who... So in Minnesota, it's more problematic in the fall fruiting crops. And for years, we have been recommending to growers to plant primocane fruiting raspberries because that would extend the season. So we could have raspberries, you know, from June all the way into September, October.
Be wonderful.
Which is great,
yeah,
because people want them.
Yeah.
But now with this pest, the populations, as they build over the summer months, in the fall is when they're really at their peak population. And so the fall bearing fruit is really a lot more susceptible to infestation. And we've seen infestation as high as 100% in our field plots here in St. Paul, which is just unacceptable. And growers, it can be really difficult to manage, and some growers are just tilling under their crops because they just don't have the resources to manage the pest, and they don't want to deal with it, and they don't want to deal with marketing a subpar or low quality fruit to their consumers. So,
right.
Yeah, I've also known growers who have had to pull out of organic certification because of the limited pesticides available to them to manage this pest. And so it's problematic from that standpoint, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, we care a lot about the Minnesota horticulture industry. We care about the success of farmers and farmers' ability to remain certified organic if they want to do that. And so let's talk about management techniques.
Okay.
Your group has been doing a lot of work on management of spotted wing in the past few years.
Right, yeah.
What are some of the projects that you're working on?
So we are really focused on developing management practices for organic producers, with the understanding that conventional growers can adopt these practices as well.
Definitely.
And one of the, so sanitation is a big one for prevention. Another technique that we're looking at that we've found some success with is exclusion. And so we've had growers in recent years adopt high tunnels for season extension. High tunnels also can help improve the quality of the fruit just by protecting fruit from rainfall and allowing the grower to have greater control over the microclimate environment in that controlled environment. And so the question was, can we then modify these high tunnels and for pest management purposes? So using fine mesh netting on the inside and end walls, can we exclude the pest from infecting the fruit? And so we've seen really great results with exclusion, reducing populations. The problem is, when we go into these structures, we have to harvest frequently. Raspberries is 2 to 3 times a week.
Right.
And they're coming in, the flies are coming in with you, right? And so for a while, you can maintain low population levels in these tunnels, but then towards the end of the season, towards the end of the harvest, they start to build up again. So it's really difficult to achieve 100% exclusion. I think integrating practices using these exclusion plus a pesticide like Entrust would help. And then that's also reducing the amount of sprays you have to make. So it's cost effective.
Okay.
It's a nice integrated strategy.
What kinds of precautions do you go through to try to reduce them from getting in with you when you go into the exclusion?
So some growers, Dale Isla Riggs is a grower at the Berry Patch in New York, and some of the work that she's been doing has been, she grows blueberries primarily, and she has maybe a couple acres covered in with this exclusion, and she's created doors, so even having a vestibule or something that that provides another barrier.
Okay.
So that's been shown to help.
Okay. And what does that look like? Is that a double door as you enter?
Yeah, just sort of a double door. Yeah. So you
okay.
enter one structure, and then you shut the door, and then you enter.
Wow.
Into the
wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot to build.
It is a lot
that's
to
a lot
build.
Of infrastructure.
It does. Yeah. And so these things might not be practical. And that's another consideration, is that these structures aren't practical for every grower. So for example, one of the grower partners that we've been working with, doing on-farm research for spotted wing Drosophila, these structures don't really fit his production system because he's pick-your-own.
Right.
And it's not really well adapted for that kind of a situation. So, but it's a tool. It's something that's been
yep.
working.
Yep. And so you can integrate this tool as part of an integrated
Absolutely.
Pest management
yeah.
program.
Yeah.
yeah, no practice is ever meant to be used all by
right.
itself as a silver bullet. It seems like spotted wing is definitely one of those pests where there is no silver bullet.
Right, yeah.
Incorporate different tactics, whatever works for somebody's mm-hmm. farm. So one of the questions, and we kind of already got to this, but when in your exclusion work, is this something where you were able to kind of figure out the system the first year as far as what's the best way to enter the exclusion and not
right.
let the insects in with you? Or did this take a lot of trial and error and fooling around?
Yeah, there's
with
a little
it?
Bit of trial and error, but generally, if the purpose is to, or the objective is to keep the flies out, our method was making sure that the fruit were totally enclosed at the green fruit stage. So we wanted, and this is another thing we're going to be investigating, is pollination. Because if you're excluding the flies, you're excluding pollinators
sure.
as well. And so some of the growers who are using exclusion with blueberries are introducing bumblebee pollinators under that excluded, under those tunnels
okay.
to provide that pollination service. With raspberries, there's less known. I mean, certainly raspberry fruit benefits from cross-pollination, but it also can self a little bit, and so we're looking at that as well. What are the pollination requirements for our common, primocane fruiting raspberries that might benefit from being in an enclosed environment? Do they need pollinators,
right.
or will they produce just as well without them? So timing is important, so making sure that the fruit is totally enclosed and excluded from the flies before they start ripening. That's
okay.
key.
Okay. So there's exclusion. What are some other tactics that you've been looking at?
Another thing that we were really interested in is another angle with pest management is trying to figure out how to make the adaptive the environment less conducive to the pest. And so we know that spotted wing Drosophila likes a cool, kind of high humid environment, and it has its upper developmental threshold level is about 88 degrees Fahrenheit, where it won't die, but it's not thriving at those high temperatures. And so flies and a lot of insects will find protected habitat to avoid these temperatures or environmental conditions that aren't favorable for them. And so one of the things that we were curious about is pruning. We were particularly looking at this in the raspberry canopy. So can we prune and open up the canopy, which is good horticultural practice, and allow some ventilation, allow some air movement? And will this have any noticeable effects on the fly population? And we did this with raspberries and with blueberries. And another advantage to pruning to open up the canopy is you're going to get better spray penetration. So your pesticide applications are going to be maybe a little bit more effective.
Yeah.
There's less hiding. There's fewer hiding places in there. And then what we found that was interesting with when we were pruning our blueberries is that we found a phenological response. And so it really pushed our heavy prune treatment. We didn't have difference in the number of flies infesting our heavy prune versus our light prune and our grower standard. But what we found in the subsequent growing season was that it pushed up the harvest window. So the fruit were larger, and the majority of the fruit was produced earlier when spotted wing Drosophila isn't as high in population density. And so the grower really liked that, and he was thinking of adopting that pruning regime for that purpose.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So it's moving your harvest date before
right.
the peak.
So phenology is also another management tool. So I mentioned, that we have some fruit that comes in late. And right now we're just not recommending, because we have so few strategies right now for
mm-hmm.
this pest, we're not recommending that folks plant these varieties that have late, ripening time. So focusing more on early fruiting varieties.
What's considered earlier in this case? I mean, when will we start seeing spotted wing
like,
this year?
So Floricane raspberries, are producing fruit on old wood, and so those are gonna come in. The fruit comes in earlier. They're not. It's you know, there is overlap towards the later end of the harvest, and we have postdoc, Dr. Andy Petran in my lab had created a nice little graphic that's available on eOrganic that shows Minnesota phenology for raspberries and blueberries, and so there's certain earlier producing varieties of blueberries too that are, it's just less risky. There's nothing inherently, the fruit's not resistant, it's just the flies aren't out when the fruit is really coming into peak.
And then I was also going to ask, when we were talking about the habitat and the temperature environments that spotted wing prefers, mm-hmm. You were talking about clearing out the canopy a bit to try to get more airflow through there. Right. Should growers also be worried about spotted wing hanging out on the margins of their farms, say in wooded areas or in a tall cover crop or something like
that? Yeah, so there's some evidence that spotted wing can... it can go into the woodlines, and it's protected in those habitats. And so having a field next to a woodlot or wooded area might be more susceptible. And there's also concern that we have alternate hosts that are wild, such as buckthorn, honeysuckle, mulberry. So these kinds of crops that aren't cultivated but can also be hosts for the fly. And it's not terribly practical because we know the fly is highly mobile to remove all of these alternate hosts, but it's something that maybe growers should be aware of and where they're planting their fruit. And so an open field is maybe a less desired habitat.
Sure. And what kinds of organic products are available? So we've talked about the mechanical and the cultural aspects of control. What about
chemical?
So we
really, the story is right now is there's one product that really works, and we're trying to get other products to increase efficacy from other products. But right now it's Entrust, and that's the brand name. It's a spinosad, which is based on a soil naturally occurring bacterium from the soil, and that's the most effective organic product right now. So some of the things we're working on is trying to look at other formulations, other products, adding feeding stimulants such as sweeteners, so that the flies can maybe ingest more of the pesticide, which would increase toxicity. So what we're really concerned with, because we only have this one product, is we're concerned with label restrictions that only allow you to make a certain number of sprays within a field season. Also pesticide resistance, so when you're using the same product over and over, you're increasing that risk of the pest overcoming the toxicity of that pesticide. So resistance management is really important. So we're just trying to find other products that growers can rotate with that work. But with these pesticides, especially the organic pesticides for this pest, they're just so expensive. So we're really trying to, and we know that a lot of organic growers are concerned about non-target effects on beneficial insects and pollinators. So we're really looking at this from a holistic kind of integrated pest management standpoint, where we're looking at almost cultural management, physical practices. And another angle of research we're going to start looking at is more biological control, because we have parasitoids that we know are able to lay eggs in pupae, so pupal parasitoids, and trying to see whether or not these parasitoids are endemic to Minnesota is one of the objectives that I have this summer.
Okay, so how would those work if the insect is possibly migrating here every year?
Right, so the parasitoids aren't necessarily specific to spotted wing Drosophila. Maybe they're host shifting from other drosophilids that are also endemic. So trying to figure that out.
Okay. I guess my question is if spotted wing is migrating here every year, what part of its life cycle would those parasitoids actually be affecting?
The pupae.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have multiple generations of this pest within a season.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess so that's an important thing that we haven't mentioned here yet.
We have multiple generations of this of the Drosophila within a season. So the life cycle is very rapid. So within maybe 30 days, depending on the temperature and the ideal environment for reproduction. So within 30 days, you can get a, you're getting a new generation. So that's pretty fast.
Yeah.
And they pupate, so the flies, they lay their eggs in the eggs hatch, the larvae go through three instars, and then they pupate. They pupate either in the fruit or they can crawl up on the outside of the fruit. And then the new adult will emerge, and then the females can lay up to 300 eggs in their lifespan, so you can have multiple generations occurring, which is also what makes it such a difficult pest and is what's responsible for the high levels of populations.
So have you heard any success stories from growers who have had a really successful experience with managing this pest?
You know, the growers who are really on top of it are really those that are practicing a lot of it. The sanitation, I would say, is probably key. And then also focusing more on on phenology management. And so focusing more on varieties that are earlier maturing and less on the later maturing varieties. We do recommend that growers educate their customers on keeping berries in the refrigerator, keeping them cold, and then not leaving them out on the counter because they're likely to see some flies come out of them if that's the case.
So since sanitation is so important, I know you mentioned earlier some of the sanitation practices, but can you just say again what is sanitation?
So sanitation, in this case, it's picking frequently, so increasing the amount of time you pick within a week. So mm-hmm. with raspberries, you know, maybe moving to three times or four times a week, mm-hmm. Which is definitely going to increase labor. That's kind of a consideration. Removing fruit that's obviously cull or unmarketable from the field, not composting it. So you want to, there's been some work, if you bag it and let it sit out in the sun, that can help. Bag it and throw it away. Burying it, there's been some evidence that you have to bury it fairly, bury infested fruit fairly deep because the flies can, they can make their way through the soil matrix. So you want to be cautious about that. And if you are going to bury them. But throwing it on your compost pile isn't going to, that's a no-no.
And if somebody wants to try exclusion, are there resources out there for them to learn, you know, what's involved, what kind of products to buy, everything that would be involved in starting exclusion?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think we ought to, we're going to be developing a fact sheet that has more practical information on where to buy the netting. So the netting is key. You have to buy it. It has to be small enough because these flies are really small. So it has to be fine mesh. And where we're buying it now, there's a couple different places. Dubois Agro Innovation is a Canadian company that sells the netting for Drosophila, for spotted wing Drosophila. Also, Dale Isla Riggs, who's that farmer who I mentioned earlier, the blueberry farmer, she has berry protection solutions. You can go online and buy the netting from her. There's another company, I think out of Minnesota, Detroit Lakes. I don't remember the name.
Oh, I think I know, and I'll tell you why I know after this.
Scoring Ag.
Okay.
Scoring Ag.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's really just getting that fine mesh.
Is there a specification? What's the mesh number?
So it needs to be smaller than 1.5 millimeters.
Okay. And then is there other material that needs to be incorporated with this system, or do you have a prototype or design that growers can use?
You know, not really. I think Dale Isla Riggs would have more because she's developed her system specifically for exclusion of spotted wing Drosophila.
Wow.
Where we're sort of looking more at, can we retrofit a high tunnel? So there's different challenges in that because not all high tunnels are made the same. We have roll up sides, roll down sides. There's different structures to them, but we find that with wiggle wire track, you can install the netting fairly simply. It's another factor altogether if you're trying to include that vestibule or that additional door. Mm-hmm. It's another design feature that we don't currently have designs for because they're so different. But
right,
what I can do right now is just point growers to where they can find the netting, and kind of growers I think are very innovative and good at making things work. So what I would recommend is that growers just kind of play around with it. For sure, a little bit of pruning is going to help with increasing ventilation and the spray coverage.
Okay.
We don't know for sure whether or not the verdict is kind of still out and whether those canopies are inherently less susceptible for spotted wing. We really weren't seeing that, but we were definitely seeing differences in fruit quality and phenology.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a pest that's not going away, so
no.
You will keep working on it.
Unfortunately. Yes.
Yeah, you will keep working on it along with researchers in other states as well, and I'm sure we'll keep learning more as growers start experimenting with some of these techniques as well.
Don't give up.
Yeah.
there's growers who are learning how to manage it, and I wouldn't let this pest discourage growers too much.
Thank you for listening to our interview with Mary Rogers on spotted wing Drosophila. Please proceed to section 2 of this episode on SWD, where I'll be interviewing Jim Riddle, the owner of Blue Fruit Farm and a longtime organic grower in Minnesota, on his strategies for managing this pest.